people want every day. They want something new. Even if it's the same strain, if it's in a different packaging, if it's red and not blue, then we say, that could be different. You know, maybe it's the same stuff, but it feels different, even if it's in a different bag, you know, like it feels different. So there's all this plays into it.
This is The Dime. Dive into the cannabis and hemp industry through trends, insights, predictions, and tangents.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of The Dime. I'm Brian Fields, and with me, as always, is Kellen Finney. And this week, we've got a very special guest, Andreas Neumann, Chief Creative Director of Jushi. Dre, how you doing? Thanks for taking the time.
Yes, thank you. Thanks for having me. It's like good to see you guys again. Like last time I was in Vegas, now back here in the trenches of California.
That'll have to get it out. Kellen, how are you doing?
I'm doing really good. Really excited to talk to Dre. Really excited to learn about the creative process that goes into building these brands that are dominating the industry. I'm really excited to have another West Coaster here to help educate the East Coast, you know? How are you, Brian?
I'm doing well. Yeah, I'm very excited to talk to Dre. I think we're going to get a very interesting conversation today about the intersection of cannabis and the future of entertainment with your background, Dre. So for our listeners, I'm feeling about you, Dre. Can you give a little background about yourself?
Yeah, my background is really originally advertising, you know, traditional advertising. I always had come from Germany. I always had my very early age, my startup, specifically film production companies in advertising. And I managed to always merge them into bigger agency groups like Saatchi & Saatchi and Grey. And this was my journey through my 20s, like always like being in that kind of in real traditional advertising. And then in my 30s, I was kind of taking the next step was like branded entertainment. So I became kind of somebody like Ellen from Matthew always calls me the grandfather of branded entertainment, but she wants to do godfather. Branded entertainment, she wants to say godfather. But and then I went in the entertainment industry, did a lot of films. I moved to England and that as well ended into companies. I merged into big agency groups. And then I went to Silicon Valley, did all the tech thing you had to do because Facebook was coming out and everybody had to have an internet company. So I had one and that was and moved to Silicon Valley. And that was my basically entry into the United States. And from there, I went to LA and then I really got a galvanization of tech. Like I understood much, much better, which kind of I was missing. I had the advertising, I had the entertainment industry, and I had the didn't have the technology industry yet. Like, so I had those three together. It's like a rare mixture of expertises. And specifically, I'm very very big fan of user experience and customer experience, so UX and CX stuff, which I was very into in my companies. And then the last thing is like I'm as well always a creative director and photographer. I did some movies that which you can see on American Valhalla is on iTunes and on Apple and on Amazon Prime. It's a movie about Iggy Pop. It's like a cool documentary, won many awards. And then as well, I'm a photographer. So and specifically focusing on rock music with the Foo Fighters, Queens of the Stone Age, Arctic Monkeys, etc. So, and the last chapter with all of that was cannabis. And I entered the cannabis industry three and a half years ago by kind of like being in California and seeing what happens in California and seeing like there's actually brands sold. And I thought, okay, and this the reason was I got into it was really because of I wanted to find a brand for the Queens of the Stone Age. And Josh and I was talking about like, okay, we have to have our own brand. That was 3 years ago. It was kind of, okay, everybody needed a brand. So on that quest, I met Jushi, the leadership like Jim Cacioppo and Eric Mauff then and kind of getting, well, dating a little bit with my group, with my team. And then we said, this is too good. This is a beautiful opportunity to join like a company that early stage then. And then I joined with the team and the rest is history. Then we went through COVID. We were very lucky with our online platform, which we installed my team and then with all the brands we created and so on. So I could really focus on one thing 100% because there wasn't much anything else going on in 2020, as we all know, and 21. And that made me focus. And the focus really paid off in terms of like first time in my life, really, I could really focus on one thing and you don't want to miss it. It's really a wonderful industry. I think it's very early still. And I really always compare it with music. Music is very similar to cannabis. It's like an art, really, even like that. And it has no canvas. It's just a feeling. You're selling really a feeling or you're presenting this. If it's recreational, of course, then you have like, I learned so much about the medical part of it. And and how and we have, because we have so many medical markets and what good it can do to our patients, how much this can this product can really help people. And I don't want to miss a minute of the last 3 years. It was one of my most exciting phases of my life, I have to say.
When you were having that early conversation with Josh and you were kind of newer to cannabis, what was that first direction? What inspired you? What were you looking for when you set out in that conversation? Was it a feel? What specifically were you looking to feel or define in that journey?
Well, then we said, you know, the band is basically like invented the genre of desert rock or stoner rock, you can call it, right? So how can you not have your own brand? You know, that was my theory. And this is what we went after. And he was very excited about that. And we just went around and met people. And so we were looking, and then this led into, I really learned that this was not the time, nor I had any idea what I was doing then. So 3.5 years later, we're getting to a point now where I can actually revisit that relationship. Music is coming out again, people going back on tour. There's new albums coming. There's a new album coming from the Queens of the Stone Age for sure at some point in the near future. And I think we will collaborate. And we have designed some of our brands like as even collaboration platforms now. Some of our new brands have that kind of openness to collaboration. They're actually designed for collaborations. And they're not like celebrity brand. They're just, hey, there's something you're doing in your genre, which is cool, which gets lots of exposure or like will help the other party exposure as well. So basically it's like a joining together for a drop, you call it, mm-hmm. and then everybody goes its own ways again. It's fun and it's around a specific event, like the tour, start of the tour or the release of a new album. So both parties benefit of that moment of like interest as well, you know, and launching something together. That's how we do it. I don't think we will ever do like a celebrity brand in Jushi.
During the early stages of this journey, were you an active cannabis user coming into the industry? Or is that something you kind of had to get your feet wet? Can you kind of describe that whole process?
I love that question. So I was basically, I smoked one joint with some friends when I was 18 in Germany. And it was like, from Morocco. It was some stuff, nobody knew what it was. So smoked, but really tight. It wasn't the right experience for me. I never touched it again until I really, just 4 years ago, where I was starting to date Jushi, or to date the guys, basically. I never do something when I have to be, I'm like a method actor in business. You know, like I have to become it. When I do a documentary, I become the person. When I shoot rock and roll, I become part of the band, really. I become it. I look, I dress like it, everything. Like I become it. And so it's the same that I did in cannabis. You know, as I was from the first day I was involved, I said, I have to try every product out there. I have to know what this is about. I have to go to a longer phase of, you know, I cannot do this during the day, but every night since then, every night I'm consuming. And I've learned so much about the product, because as you guys know, it's not as easy as you try one time and then you know what it is. It's a kind of a journey. You maybe start out with vape, then you go to gummies, then you come back to flower, then you enjoy really flower, and then you maybe get even into concentrate, and then you back into the gummies. So it's like, I think even consuming and having, since I'm in California here, I can literally try everything. And we have three stores here. So we literally, the world is your oyster. So I've tried so much things. And I have to say, it's like, I even come back when people hyping up so much the high percentage THC and everybody goes for higher and higher. And sometimes you see 40% THC in California. But I enjoy as well now, after all this journey, I enjoy an 18% pre-roll. You know, because it's not only about that, as we know, but not many people know that, because the terpenes more are the steering wheel, as we say. And so it's really like, it is a big journey until you understand that product. And I'm not done yet, but I had to become it. Otherwise, I cannot talk to you guys even. I would be like kind of so in Germany, you call it a dry swimmer. So you know how to swim, but you know, you actually cannot do it. And you know, technically, you know.
I'd love to stay there. So when you're first getting started in cannabis, was there certain products type you started with? And then take us through how you expanded. Did you do certain activities after? Did you try to correlate your body, say, I ate certain foods, I took it at a certain time? Take us through that experiment when you were getting into the role, preparing.
So I started really with edibles. And that was like, the first experiences were like, oh my, you cannot really, you don't know where you're, how you dose it really. Like, so you could take two, it's like five, you don't feel anything. I remember like I did some Kiva gummies, or not Kiva, like the espresso beans. And I was driving back from San Diego. We were just about to buy a dispensary there, which we never bought, but then I took on the way back three of the, I took one, and I took another one, and I still don't feel anything. And the third one I took, and then literally like it, it all kicked in, right? So that was that example where you can overdo the edibles. You have to really be careful with the edibles, and that I learned then. And then of course I tried them in all kinds of situations. It's even like a social experiment. So I did it alone the most of the time, and then I started to interact with people. It took me a while until I was confident enough to sit on a table for dinner, and actually I'm the only one who took a gummy. And then you always think, do they know? Do they not know? And so this kind of to overcome and enjoy it, it's a big step. And it took me a long, long time to handle that, right? This little paranoia showing up and not, and you handle that. I think I personally, I'm a person, through cannabis, I become, it sounds a little bit like cheesy, but I become the better version of myself, because I'm too crazy. I'm basically like a little bit too much, too adventurous maybe. Maybe I'm too much risk-taking in my daily life. And cannabis takes me to another place. I'm actually looking at myself. And then you overcome all this phases you go through while you're smoking a joint or while you're taking gummies or while you're like, then the concentrate was the last one. The concentrate is like a complete, was an experience for me. I could smoke a joint before, and then you take some concentrate, some live rosin, and the whole thing resets. So it's basically a new high, and it's completely like the other one is gone in the second, and you've established a complete new thing. It's nearly you sobering up in the second, and into the kind of, then the new journey starts. So it was very, I tried nearly every configuration, gummies with joy, not joy, and two gummies, three gummies, then the tinctures to sleep, tinctures with valerian roots, with additional melatonin. So all that stuff, right, which can give you a little hangover, and then, but it's very good for sleep. And so I can talk about this forever, but it's really, you have to do it in order to enjoy it, I think. And that will have everybody, every stoner, call them stone, will tell you that this takes a while, right? And microdosing during the day. I've tried it in the weekend, and I can get by better now. But it's not easy for me. Like, it's not easy to be with people. And then as well, be with people who take it as well, because they get paranoid and they're looking at not anymore at you. And then they having to deal with their own emotions. So it's a fascinating product, cannabis, right? And specifically, I mean, when you want to focus on one thing, of course, sometimes I'm to chill. I do some photo sessions, and then I'm basically grading the photos. It helps me very much focus on one thing, like amazingly, and go places creatively more than I would normally go. And sometimes it's not working out, but sometimes it's amazing. So it's an endless journey, I think, and it's always different. And that's why people want in our stores, it's always like, do you have something new? Do you have something new? Do you have something new? They always want to try the new thing. And then sometimes they want to come back to this old memory, right? But then the old memory is never the same, because you have eaten something, or you were in a certain mental state at that point. You were like in the desert with your friends, or you know, you cannot work out with the same. And you're walking in New York on the street, and the wind blows from the Hudson River, and it's a snowstorm. And it's just a different, it's always different, right? It's always different. And that's why I compare it with music. Music is a feeling as well. And it's just wherever you listen to it as well, it's received differently and puts you into different places. It's a fascinating product.
Have you found a certain product that helps kind of unlock like a different level of creativity, or takes you to like a whole other place when you're in that creative state, or you're still looking for that?
I'm a sativa guy more than an indica guy. Then we know that everything is hybrid, but it all happens in your head as well, right? So I'm more a sativa guy. And when I have a sativa, I'm as well the type of guy who can drink an espresso before I can go to sleep. I can sleep after drinking an espresso at night. So it doesn't matter to me. I can put myself to sleep. But if I focus on something with a good sativa, it's like it's very good for focusing on one thing, which is very hard for me because I always have 15 things going on, as you can imagine. Like,
did that surprise you when you first got into it and realizing that cannabis could help you like focus creatively and really lock in?
Yeah, totally. But this sounds again so cheesy. It can help you. It's like it's all about how much force you can apply to the situation in order to enjoy it, right? It, in the beginning, when you're starting, it takes over. It's if you cannot do much anymore, But if you overcome it, right? I coach myself. I think a lot when I smoke, I think a lot about death, which I never think about. What happens if I die? What happens then? What happens to the family if I die? All these stupid things, which I never think about. So it makes me actually more sensible, you could say, about like my family, how conservatively I prepare everything, and like how I respect my life more, that I'm alive. And so that all comes. And this is really overwhelming, right? You can get paranoid from that, like nearly like, oh my God, I'm a bad dad, I'm going to die. But now I can handle it. I'm used to it. The thought comes, what happens if I'm going to die now? And I can handle it. I actually enjoy it now. So, but it's, I'm sure other people have the same thing. You know, it's kind of the classics. It does something in your brain, which you have never tapped into. So you got to get comfortable with it. And it's only, it's like with everything, if you want to be a good runner, you have to go running every day. So you have to do this every day really to get to that place, I think, which sounds a little bit crazy, but if you do it at night, I mean, I've never had a hangover. I've never had any effect when I wake up in the morning, 5 o'clock fresh. It's, you know, people have always that stereotype about the stoner. It doesn't get up. It doesn't, lives in a mess. And that's what I know from Germany. You know, like I say, lazy and lives in a mess and everything is all over the place. With me, it's the opposite. I get so anal about like everything. I put everything into place. My studio looks like every little pencil is like in a certain angle, like I get super specific about stuff, right?
So, is there a specific food that you like to enjoy?
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you always want to say, I'm a big, in Germany, Nutella was I grew up on Nutella, so they always want the Nutella bread. That's plug, great brand. But yeah, the sweets, you know, like you enjoy that, and you get, of course, you get a little bit hungry and stuff, but I think it's very healthy if you dose it right. You can overdo it, of course, but then you cannot really overdo it because all it's going to happen is like you're going to pass out, right, and sleep. So it's very safe in my opinion. But of course, we're not allowed to say that it's safe because what if a meteoroid hits you when you walk out stone on the street? It wasn't safe.
The reason I ask that is because I think sometimes people get surprised when they hear about the creativity aspects it unlocks. And for me, specifically, cannabis has helped me unlock a different level of creativity and that focus that you talked about. And for some who are newer to this, like I encourage them to try and find that spot, because once you do, it's eye-opening for me. And someone like yourself, Dre, who's done a ton of creative projects, I can only imagine that first time when you felt that creative boost and locked in and go, wow, this is a whole nother level.
Totally. And you can enjoy stuff more intensely, right? So when I look at my movie, I did American Valhalla, when I rewatched that under the influence, it opens just another level. Like I understand my own movie better than when we were editing. It just kind of, you know how it works. You have something and then people comment on it and it's so great how you put this person in the background. It's just like a metaphor for this and that. And it's like, well, it was just accidentally running through, really. It was not my great creative plan to do that, but it just happened. But I can see that stuff like that, you know, more intensely. And it's super exciting to, it's basically like a rebirth, right? Reborn.
How do you take all of this stuff and make it a tangible like direction for building brands?
Exactly. No, that's why I'm doing it. This is one of the other things. So when we started in Yushi, so the creative team, we don't have a marketing team. We call it the creative team. I knew this from the beginning. It doesn't fit marketing to cannabis. So we always called ourselves a creative team. So I had to learn, I had to consume. And out of all these learnings, like the first brands we did, we had no idea. But the good news was that there was some legacy brands we bought with Yushi, like Bank and The Labs, which already had a story. So we could write on that story. I personally think always, and this is no offense or anything, but they are older brands, right? They were there in Colorado. They're more like a packaging concept than a brand, but they turned into a brand because people like the stuff and then they like the packaging and then that's what's then called a brand, but it wasn't really a brand. A brand, in my opinion, you have to want to be it, yeah? And I don't want to be the Bank, really. Like maybe in Vegas, right? But But, you know, like you have to identify with something. So you have to come, this is what we learned. Like we're big in marketing research, right? So we researched everything and like we researched the names, we know the concepts. So, but driving that research in the right direction was as well important to know the product and know all the other products which are out there. And why are they successful? Why they're not successful? Why is Wild so successful? This was then like the big thing. I hold this in my hand. I wasn't really getting it, to be honest. I mean, I know outside looks nice, but then you end up with this little weird, like little white plastic thingy, plastic box. And that I didn't understand why it's so successful, but the gummies were fantastic. Yeah, the gummies are still, they're consistent and they taste great and they have a great effect. And that's why they're selling so well, I think. It's not necessarily the power of the brand and like it turns into that maybe. So I think, you know, when we develop stuff now and the latest stuff we develop is like a brand called Hijinks. It's not out yet. Hijinks is coming out. And this brand will be very, very much all the learning we had over the years, what people, how a flower brand, a commodity should be sold. Compare it with water. I mean, and it's just a commodity is that not really, should not be really like depending on its packaging. It shouldn't be depend on it in the golden jar. And then people say, why do I want great flour? I know the packaging is great, but I want great flour. And if I have in this golden jar, no quality, it's not, we're never going to build anything. So our new concepts are very much like, are completely not taking yourself serious. Not pretending to be something, be very inclusive, be diversive. You know, in the designs, we have more than one design coming out, like for one product. So it's like, there's not even rules for the GP or the factories to put this into a certain packaging concept. It could be anything. They could just take whatever they want, and people always will experience something new. And I'll present that obviously like to the world. Like maybe we will launch it in the next months in some of our markets. And it will completely be effortless and free and not pretending to be this cool little thing. It's just all Mylar bags, of course. Even if it's high-end, it's going to be Mylar. It's going to be colorful and it's going to be as well leaning to celebrate our local grows for the future. We have grows in Scranton. We have grows in Virginia. So we want to locally grown like a craft beer, right? It's locally grown. Make people be proud of it. They're proud of it. Like in Scranton, we have like with the stores, over 300 people working in Scranton, Pennsylvania, which is a very distressed place. You know, like, we're very proud of like growing there and having stores there, which do very well in Pennsylvania. And these stores will as well celebrate the local grown stuff, you know, and not only like, okay, the next great thing and stuff. So it's all in that concept. It's all learnings from what we had. People want every day, they want something new. Even if it's the same strain, if it's in a different packaging, if it's red and not blue, then we said, that could be different. You know, maybe it's the same stuff, but it feels different, even if it's in a different bag, you know, like it feels different. So there's all this plays into it. So it's not, as you said before, it depends what you've eaten before, in what environment you are. Are you with great friends? Are you with some people you don't know? Are you in a restaurant? Are you doing it illegally on a plane? It's always something different experience, right? So this new brand is ready for that. And the most important thing is it doesn't take itself so serious like the others. It's just liberating and in all aspects of it as well. And it's a lifestyle brand, really. But it's all about what's in the bag and not what's on the bag, basically.
I like the simplicity of that. And I like the variability of that. Because you're right. If you see it in a certain case and then you come back and it's in a different style box, you might be more intrigued to try it because it feels different and it kind of plays directly into the variability of the plant.
Oh, it goes into your brain, no? Like, it's red.
But how do you build the brand, right? How do you get that sort of established understanding? Because what works in Pennsylvania might not work what's in California and certainly might not work what's in Arizona. So how do you build that brand and that trust so different consumers feel that same experience?
Yeah, it's really tailored to the locations. You know, like people always forget that we with our stores. We always make it, we have a national campaign and this. It's not the national. It's very, very local. Every store we have in Vegas, we've got only in Vegas. We have three stores in Vegas. So more in Nevada, but three in Vegas. So two of those are New Leaf stores, which we acquired. They have a completely by location. They have a completely different customer profile than the 5 miles away suburban Beyond Hello store in Vegas, which is most of customers are, they're retired entertainment people. They don't want to smoke anymore. You know, they're standing, they were in a casino their whole life. So they, the most selling item, most wanted item there is gummies. And I've never seen this in any other markets. Everybody wants gummies there. They all, the customers are above 45, 50. They go for the, and they can spend money as well. So they have more money. They want higher end stuff. And in, I call it Twain Street, the New Leaf in Twain Street, which is close to the Wynn Hotels, close to the convention center, is a place where it's really like a little Trader Joe's. You know, it's like you have mainly house brand and it's New Leaf. And you have it presented in a certain way. You have like go in and there's like this glass displays and you have the flowers sitting there with their names and their strains. And then you say, oh, I want some of that Baba Kush. That looks good. And then the guy goes and takes the bag with Baba Kush and gives it to you. So it doesn't matter what brand it is. He wants Baba Kush, right? He's like, Caesar, it's presented, Baba Kush, great strain. Give it to me. So that's all our house brands, basically. But it's not even, it's called New Leaf, like the store. And then we have all, maybe we have a certain inventory of course, the classics, the Wilds, the Caminos. And but of course, we have our own gummy brand as well. So and that's competing with those, of course, because it's more inexpensive. And I think you have to really look at the local stores, what they want. And you have to, then that's the challenge now with the brand. What are those people like? So like with my new brand approach, with our new brand approach, is like that you have to be very flexible with those things. So even the packaging, if I have an incline, just to give you an example. So the desert packaging of our new brands, they will have desert packaging and they will have like the Incline Village and Lake Tahoe, our dispensary. They have like, have maybe mountains on it and draw like all drawings or creative collaboration with some local artists on the packaging to make it like feel like it's from here, you know, and not from some big corporation. Just they drop their flour, it's just industrialized, all it's like all the same stuff. So you'll be very, very flexible with that by location, imagine. And that's possible because we have worked a long time and we have like over 20 package designs that are all approved by, so you know, in the medical states, the DOH has to approve all that stuff, the Department of Health. And so we went all through that stuff with it. Why are you having 20 different designs, right? You have to explain, but you have to as well think about the seasonal stuff. You have like a Pride Month, you know, you need to react to that, I think. So we will have like the rainbow all the way through. Our flower will be rainbow colors all Pride Month. So and this is, I think you have to react, be able to react on the fast, right? On the local demands and see it. This is a local play, not a national play, really, if you want to be successful with it.
Are you taking any of your expertise and your skill set from a creative side and leading it back to the product formulation to try to marry the two products going forward, saying you're looking for more of like a tropical flavor with this type of brand? How does that work?
Oh, no, this is all, exactly. This is all market research. We have like focus groups. We have like to send around to like hundreds of people. We have like people trying stuff. Specifically impact, my team has into the gummy, the gummies. This was our latest. We had a great gummy created with, we have our own chef employed in Massachusetts, Chef Matt, who was like in the finalist of American Super Chef or whatever it's called. He was a finalist and he's a pastry chef. So with him together, we're developing now a lot of great stuff with him. And it's all gluten-free and vegan. This is all research. And sometimes you have to as well, like research like 2 years said, people don't care about vegan and gluten-free. It has changed already a little bit. And now I'm thinking, no, don't exclude it because nobody really does it. All they're all like not vegan and gluten-free, the Wilds and stuff. But imagine I have to take more and more gummies. And now I'm not taking some of those markets have limitations, right? In Massachusetts, you're gonna only have maximum 5 milligrams in one gummy. So I personally now I would have to take like 4 or 5 and have 10. I mean, that gets now okay. 5 years of calories and thing, and it's not healthy. So I rather have like a vegan made with fresh fruit from south of France. We buy this in this beautiful, like sustainable farm there and all kinds of stuff. So all kinds of stories around it and the chef and everything. So we have big impact in that. And we're trying to really come up with some stuff, which is special. So you can see that in Massachusetts, the brand is called Tasteology. And it's selling amazing since we launched it. So like it's only launched like, I think, three, four months now. Sleep gummies coming. And there's, of course, the classic formulations, 10 milligram THC, 10 milligram CBN. There's those you know, what best-selling sleep gummy of Wild. Of course, we're copying all that as well. What works will be copied. And like that's what you do in every genre, in, as well in music, in advertising, everywhere. So we see it, what others are doing, and trying to even make it a little bit better.
Are you concerned at all, Dre, that you're pushing the line of inspiration past where the current consumer is? For example, there are some consumers here in New York that are still a little more novice in understanding what's going on. And from your understanding and your experience, you're pushing the level to a whole nother spot. Are you concerned at all about the educational gap or the experience gap between, you know, where you're trying to take it and where the current educational level of the consumer is today?
That's interesting. They say this with New York. I mean, they're throwing around all kinds of Californian stuff. They're like left, right, and center, right? You don't know if it's real, if it's not real. But it's like, so the consumer gets what they have to take what's in front of them. So we're just trying to make sure that what's in front of them is safe, is tested, tastes good. I mean, we talk about edibles, and it's really of the highest quality of ingredients, right? There's so many mistakes you can make. I think the consumer, our responsibility is to give the consumer the best product it can be in that market, because you know there's sometimes problems with distillate, there's all kinds of problems or regulations and stuff, so you cannot do the perfect thing, but we're trying always to make the perfect thing. So, and assuming that is then for the best for the consumer, you know, like it's not like you have to present them something great which you would use yourself. I think in this is like, give you a nice one here, name drop. I had my last startup with Bono was on the advisory board, and I had this meeting with Bono, and I had this dinner with him, and then he said basically at some point he stopped asking other people's opinions about his music. He said if he likes it, then that's enough for him and for the band. so and he said, and statistically, if he likes it, there's millions of people out there who will like it as well. But there's will be millions as well who don't connect to it. But it's enough. His opinion, but of course it's Bono. But I said, like, when it's good for me, it's or like for the team and good for the consumers we're testing it with, then it's good for everybody. And this is our responsibility, because it's really something. If you put something in your system, if you eat it, you really have to trust the company. And we really like taking that very serious. This is something you keep forgetting. You get all this stuff when there's like drinkables, edibles, and you never, this chocolate things, you never know where they come from really. But because cannabis is in it, you just take it, right? And then, okay, whatever. I don't know where this really comes from, but that's it. It's in now.
So what are your thoughts on beverages, Trey?
I really like beverages. I think it's kind of, it sounds funny, but I think it's kind of could be the future.
You know? Right? If it's done right, you think?
If it's done right, but it's not the time yet. But I think now is the time it's probably the time to think about going to the next level in terms of drinks, and take your time when the whole industry is really like a little bit depressed, I would call it. Take that time and slowly develop some good stuff there in this category, because it's going to come at some point. And it's not going to be smoking really. Nobody wants really. I mean, we love smoking, but people, even if it goes, the whole of the United States go recreational, I think smoking will be not the favorite thing of the regulators. Will be even stricter, you know, like that you cannot do it. So vaping, we know already, there's a big story out there. So vaping and smoking will be difficult, even when it's federal legal. So the other category is much more promising than the edibles and the drinks. And the drinks, of course, we are drink culture. Think about it. I mean, go to a bar, there's how many different brands you see on this bar. Should there not be sometime in the future, like a whole selection of canna this, canna that, and you just have your mojito canna and not mojito, and it's exactly regulated, it's 5%, or you want a 5% or 10% mojito, I take the 10 and start with that, and then have another 10, and then and so on. So I think this is where it's going. So you have to, but there's a lot of research we have to do here to figure out what is the right category. Otherwise you can burn your fingers a lot on that, I think. Because it's, as you know, not the biggest selling category at the moment.
Are there any companies that you're drawing inspiration from outside of the cannabis industry that you're like looking to apply to Juicy?
Yeah, I think we're always looking at, we're always looking at Red Bull. Red Bull is a super interesting company, how they built themselves, how they have kind of they were the first ones who had basically the creative team as well in-house and not like working with tons of agencies who make them then great. They have more rooted from inside. And this is what I'm doing with my group in Jushi, right? So we have our own creative team. We make our own movies, we make our own films, we make our own photographies, we make our own product photography, all in-house. Everything has come from in-house. We never hired an agency beside PR with the glorious Matthew, which we love, but not ever creatively, right? So I think that's important. And I always compare us with that. And we're learning from them. And they did a lot of, you know, the creator in the early stage of Red Bull, there was a phase, I don't know if you know that, but the product was found in Thailand and it was originally an old people's refresh, like old people drank it and they got more energy. And then they brought it to Germany and the German guys, they really, the founders, they wanted to distribute it to pharmacies. So very close to our world here, like in cannabis, because they wanted to market to old people. But they decided to start a new category of drinks, which is the first energy drink, right? And then this took a whole completely, started really a movement, right? With the involvement and the great brand entertainment with the extreme sports and stuff. And that's very close to how cannabis advertising will be in the future. You know, you cannot advertise cannabis, but you can become part of a movement and use that movement for your purposes, right? You don't ever have to probably have the name of the ideal is you don't put the name of the brand ever anyway. You just know, this is that, that's that, you know? So that's branded entertainment again, where I come from. So you have to basically look at the brand values of what you communicate, and then you find intellectual properties which communicate the same thing. Could be a band, could be a film, could be a theater play, whatever. Like, but you promote that instead of the brand, and through that the brand is promoted. And somehow we woven into it. So that's kind of, I think, what's going to come, and we can learn from that from Red Bull specifically. I mean, they're the masters of this game, and they have their own record company, they have their own TV. It's for a reason. They don't want to make money with music. They just want to be close to the artists and then actually own, let's say, own the artist and not having to knock on the door of an artist and then say, hey, can you promote my thing? How much? And then I rather have them part of the family, then they can help me promote my stuff because they're in the family and we support them with the music. So this is all stuff I've done before and will happen, you know, like, so I'm not going to talk about Jushi Records yet, but
maybe
it's not exactly. Jushi TV, we already running some pilots, you know, we're creating some episodes with our chef and stuff. So we call that Jushi TV, but that is really, we're trying to find the spot for that. You know, at some point it's going to go bigger, and then Jushi TV and as well, our involvement with them or our like collaboration with the music industry will be great, but we're never going to do celebrity stuff. I mean, this is like a big no-no, I think. It's like you never want to depend on somebody, on an individual for that stuff. It's more like a collaboration, and it's probably like has its time and then it's gone, because nobody wants to smoke Justin Bieber the whole year. You want to smoke it maybe like a week and then, okay, can we have something else now? So I think it's important to say that lots of people burn themselves with that stuff, and hiring as well, like agencies from the outside world, and if Saatchi and Saatchi comes up with the weed brand, they're going to charge you like a bunch of $1 million, and then they come up with Monogram or something like that, you know, like which just looks very cool, and I'll keep the packaging, but you only buy it once, really. Then you have it, and it's just we know it's like third party anyway, so. Like I put my own pre-rolls in the packaging and look cool at the bar, but that's it, you know? So you have to be honest about that. So you have to know, really dive deep in order to be creative in this genre. And I could never pretend in this. 3 years ago when we started, we had no idea what we were doing. We just basically like copying others to bridge that time where we learn the genre, right? You have to do that. So we did, that's what we did, and it was pretty successful. But you can do that, right? It's something you don't know really, and you should, what the other's doing. Okay, let's do the same. One thing I wanted to say, we had a great innovation already, is our brand Sachet. It's this kind of, it's the fine grind stuff. You know, nobody really made a big deal. There's all this stuff got thrown away for distillation. And we said, hey, let's make a brand out of it. This is like a not high testing. This is whatever it is. It's totally effortless again. It's called Sachet. We do pre-rolls. We do big, like even like ounces, jars with pre-grind stuff. And you can buy it for an affordable price, and you never know what it is really. It's all mixed together with stuff, so it's always an adventure. And nobody ever complained about it because you don't pretend to be, oh, it's the greatest flower. It's just, hey guys, this is just the stuff with spores on the floor. We grind it up and you can roll fast with it. And sometimes it's great. Sometimes it's maybe not so good, but it's what it is. It's not expensive. So it sells a lot and it's created this new category for us, which now most is kind of a little Bud Light of cannabis, I would say, that brand. So it's kind of, it's not consistent, but it's consistent, it's cheap. So that's good. But it's most of the time it's good as well. Because you know that stuff which you grind up, their stems, they have great, they're still great. So
not great. Really grind up. If you had unlimited capital, what initiatives would you take on that you aren't currently able to?
I mean, if you talk about Jushi, if I had unlimited capital, I would really go into M&A mode now and acquire. And I would wait a little bit longer, which we do, you know, which we do. But if I have unlimited capital, I would buy everything because I could buy probably for $3 billion or $4 billion that could become the biggest cannabis company in the world in a second. And I think they're super undervalued because look at the performances. If you look at Trueleaf and look at Curaleaf, or GTI and their earnings, it's pretty impressive and it's just starting. I mean, they're crossing $1 billion revenues and look at the stock price. That's completely nuts, really. Like this has never anywhere this has happened. So unlimited capital, I would buy them all. I would probably buy a bunch of those and put them together into one.
And make a monopoly, right?
Straight monopoly.
Then you end up as Rockefeller, right? And in the end, you have to unmonopoly it all.
They got a square named after him, though, in New York, right?
Can we expect any collaborations based on your musical experience and your relationships with some of the bigger names with Jushi in the potential future?
So one collaboration I always want to do is do with the Queens of the Stone Age, which is my good friends, and I'm collaborating with Josh Homme, the lead singer and kind of boss of the band since 10 years. So we're going to do it at some point. It's more, these collaborations are really more fun than business. It's really for both sides. It's a fun thing. As I said before, something happens, there's a new album coming out. And this is always the problem with those things. Always when you collaborate with the music industry or something, they have their own focus. So if they don't have a new album, why would they even do it? You know, there has to be, the timing has to be right. That's why this is happening not often. If there's a new album out, if there's a tour now, a big tour coming, then you can basically use that momentum of the band and attach it. But then we have to have a reason in brand land to launch something specific. So if you can align those two things, that would be the perfect storm. It's very hard to achieve. And that's why it's not done often. But we think maybe this year we could land one of those. So if Josh comes out with a new album and we are ready at the same time, then we're going to do definitely a Queens of the Stone Age edition of our new brand Hijinks.
Let's do it, Josh. Are there any areas of the cannabis industry that you're extremely bullish on for the future, but others are not as so?
Bullish in terms of, I believe super in the brands. So that's really our focus, the brands, you know, and making our organization more lean because we were growing a lot and we have a lot of, from that time, we have a lot of like call it fat. We have to streamline the machine and really focus. I'm really excited about brands because brands can go beyond borders. Brands can be everywhere. It's like in brands, it's like, nobody has really created their lifestyle brand. Somebody has to crack that nut, right? So I'm really want to focus on that. And this is one of our, that's what we're launching now. That could be as close as it's as so far anyone gotten, hopefully. But this is our focus. I think the brands are super important now in these times. Especially when you have time now to develop stuff. You know, you have the stores going, everything is going, there's a machine going. You make the machine more leaner and then you can focus on the stuff, which basically the stores are the theaters or the cinemas. And then we have to get beautiful movies, the brands into the cinema. So I think that's what we've got to focus a lot. We call it bullish focusing on.
When you got started in the cannabis journey, what did you get right? And most importantly, what did you get wrong?
So I think right, we were lucky that we were in a place where just digital was in a, Jushi was just starting. So we were like, had the server was great. We had a fresh canvas there. We created the digital angle or the digital wing of Jushi, which was got very powerful and it's a big lead generator for the stores, right? That was lucky as well, 100% lucky. It's all started in COVID. You know, I always say everybody's a great marketer in COVID or was a great, everything kind of worked, right? Like you don't even have to take too much credit of it. But the credit is you're at the right time and right place. So that's if you do that, then it's stuff work. So that was for us the case in all the digital and our brands. We were lucky that we had some heritage brands. We could launch those first and we bought, make some acquisition where we just replaced their categories. We looked at the data. They have what's their most selling categories, most selling strains. We just replaced it with our stuff. And then basically for the consumer, it didn't change much. So this was, it was a very, I feel we brought our best, what we learned over the years in any industry and put it into this. Because you're always at your best at the now, right? So if you're not sick or something, I mean, the experience of all this stuff I did for like nearly 25, 30 years, I started my first company with 21, so like 30 years goes into Dushi. So they get the best of the best at that moment. So that was the good thing. Now, most important, what is not so good? I wish we would have launched in more stores. Because it's first of all it's so much fun. It makes you more invincible, right? The more stores you have, then you not have to worry about like one falling off and then it's not performing. So, but we only have like 37 stores, and so when one doesn't perform anymore or something happens, like in certain markets where the revenue goes down, sometimes it hits you more than if you have like 184 stores or something, and then one doesn't perform, it's okay. So that, I think that's. I would have loved we would have done more stores, but we're on it, so we will have more stores. But would have loved to have even more. But I think looking at the history of Dushi and what was achieved in that short amount of time, I mean, we have like over like 1,300 to 1,400 employees now, and when I joined, it was like 15 guys with a PowerPoint presentation just about to buy Yontalo in Pennsylvania. So that shows that was probably we couldn't have done any more. And again, COVID helped us because everybody worked like 100 times more than normal because we don't have what else are you going to do? You sit in your studio and you just do that. So we did an amazing progress in those 3 years, I think, and can be proud of it. I mean, we've got over 164 SKUs in 6 states with brands, all brands, and super proud, I have to say, what was achieved. Can you achieve more? Of course, like, can you look run after different states and you learn out if you should come after that state more? Like, yeah, but we did what we did. I think we're very proud of Virginia as well. Virginia was one of our wonderful acquisitions. That was from ground up. There was nothing there, and we Jim and team had the balls to jump in there. Hundreds of millions of dollars were spent to build this humongous facilities there. And it's a great market, Virginia, right? It's like this is like in our health sector, we're the only ones. We have 6 stores there, and they built to the kind of pretty machines. These so they're built for recreational market, right? So if that switches at some point, it's going to be fantastic. So it's my favorite. And then second, I really like Nevada. I like Massachusetts a lot. We have a great store there, like on the border to New Hampshire. Amazing performance, and of course Pennsylvania, where we have 18 stores, and this is medical, and these stores are ready for recreational as well. They always were. They have this kind of rebranded as well, as you might know, like Beyond Hello to a more like recreational logo as well, like mid-century style now and more fun. So that's getting ready for specifically Pennsylvania getting recreational, hopefully at some point. And that's going to be a big deal for us. Because that's where we have our most stores. So yeah, that's kind of the juicy overview. But it's an interesting question, you know. Like I think you can always think back what you could have done better. But if you do every day the best you can do, that's kind of it, you know. Like then you have to be lucky, very lucky, always with timing specifically.
Especially here in cannabis, right? There's so much to learn. So before we do predictions, we ask all of our guests if you could sum up your experience in a main takeaway or lesson learned to pass on to the next generation, what would it be?
The next generation of cannabis people, or is there anything else than cannabis?
It could be life-based. It could be life-based advice, something that you think would be insurmountable for someone who's graduating college, who's looking to get involved professionally.
That's great. I love that. So first of all, I think today's people who enter anything, they have to be multitaskers. It's easy said, like, okay, you have to be focusing on one thing and you only do that one thing. But I think in companies today, you cannot sit around only be good at one thing. You have to have skills, more than one skill. This is not only for cannabis. This is in every company. It goes from tech to cannabis to car to it's really not because you have to do all of those things, but you have to understand them so you can make decisions, which is what you do, which is good for the company. And if you don't do it, if you're just a coder and you just code and somebody tells you, code this, code that, and he never understands the big vision or like the thing he's doing, where that fits and where they can take, he will discover so many, if you tell him exactly, or he knows already the company, so, but I could do this. And then if I could do this, then I could do that. And that will help the whole organization save $10 million a year because of that, which the other person would have not seen because sometimes you deep in the detail, you go, wow, if I just do this different, then you would save that. But if I didn't even know where the company is going, what's the company's goals, or have a business understanding on the whole, then you're just going to be a little ant doing some stuff, and then you go home at night, and then you come back, and then you ant around a little bit the next day, and you get paid for it. It's not like I don't feel that's fulfilling for anyone in the long term, right? So have your eyes open. Try to learn everything. If you work for a company, try to understand, listen to the earnings calls, try to understand the industry. All that stuff is important, even if you're like just doing a small part of the whole organization. But this will be important to understand. It will create culture and will move the company in the right direction. And if everybody does it in the company, it's going to start this momentum. And then when you have those companies that are really like taking off in a hot, people aligned, culture is great, people working together, people understand each other, people compliment each other, all that stuff. So this is things, I think when you go over like 1,000 people, it's very, very, very hard. And you have to push on that. So that's one advice, to be good at more than one thing. And don't hesitate to risk. If there's some opportunity, just forget everything you have. And just, you can, if you feel it, jump on it. I jumped on this cannabis thing for a lot of being, okay, I'm a rock and roll photographer, I'm doing movies, and it's great, whatever. Like, okay, why would I do, the people from my outside was like, why would I do that? It's, now I'm working in cannabis, I'm kind of a corporate guy here. Like, is it not much more fun to do the Foo Fighters album? But you can do this both, you can both at the same time. And the Foo Fighters benefiting of it because you have an understanding now of something which I can bring into the other genre as well. You know, I can bring more to the table, and when I do an album cover for somebody now than I did 3 years ago, because I understand so much how business, how retail works, how what people like, what people don't like, colors, all kinds of brands. So I'm really fresh in my, and I have a huge team who's giving me all this information. Imagine. So now I'm bringing this to the photography again, and then it makes me a better photographer. So this is, I think, something, don't be scared of try new things. If you feel it, just jump into it. And it's not, today you have YouTube University as well. Don't forget that. It's not only college and your college degree. It's like something everybody can learn everything if he wants to, or he or she wants to, you know. It's not as difficult as it used to be when I grew up. I had no TV, you know, and then I got the black and white TV, and then I got, and then I have three programs, but the channel is closing down in Germany at 8 o'clock at night, and you see just a test picture for all night. So imagine what you have today. If you want to fix my dishwasher, I'm watching a YouTube video to fix my dishwasher, and not paying the guy who's like circling around and trying to find a reason to charge me like $400 for like one thing.
Unplugging it to plug it back in.
Motherboard reset. Right.
It's off, Dre. We got to put it on.
This is really good. And what if you really like, the last thing I want to say, watch my movie, not because I want to plug it, but American Valhalla, the story of like Josh Homme producing Iggy Pop's last album, is a great piece to watch for people who, I always was in this Q&A, and some people told me like I changed my path after I watched this movie, because it's just really preaches, do really what, follow your dreams. If you have a dream, just follow it. You know, don't give a shit about what everybody says and like, you know, all this stuff, and everybody has an opinion. Don't listen to it. Just do it. And if it, do it as best as you can. If it fails, it's a great experience. Then you can try something else. So this movie, if you watch it on Amazon or on Apple, it's pretty cool in this respect. It tells that story of a creative journey of two people coming together and making something great. And without any compromise, right? And not thinking about moneyness. It's more of an art project. So it's a really good thing to watch for any young young person who wants to start anything, creative or not creative, or business.
That's well said. All right, let's do prediction. Dre, do you see cannabis being a CPG product? If so, what creative ways can cannabis companies compete with other CPG products?
First of all, it's a CPG. It depends really on the genre. Like, let's say it's with flower. Flower itself, I think it's questionable if flower even should be branded, right? They can be extreme. We say, like, even if I'm talked about now launching a new flower brand, but I could even say it probably doesn't need a brand or anything. Like, it's just a commodity, and you should go into a store and just like get a mason jar. You want that? You want that? Okay, take a mason jar, put it in, and give it to you, and then smoke and come back next time and get something else. So as soon as it's processed, like a vape or like gummies, and then it turns into the strawberry turns into strawberry jam, right? And strawberry jam actually has now like the potential of having a story. Comes from somewhere, some my grandmother's recipe, and then you can attach all that stuff, which makes a CPG product, right? Like okay, there's a whole, this is going to be a brand. This is people only buy that because it's kind of like all the myth and legend around it. What's the story about, right? And this is where it starts. I think as soon as it's processed, pre-rolls as well could be that, and of course the drinks, and any edible, chocolate. This is all like stuff which I think. You can create real brands out of it. Flour, I'm still doubting really if we should go back just sell it as like
Colorado like, style, deli style, right?
Deli style.
Yeah, like exactly deli style, like bakery, you know, like some bread. And then everybody has some different bread. You know, like there's like some bakeries have better ones, but I would say so then you go to the best one, and it's not about the brand, you know. And then so many brands, imagine how weird is that? Like you have brands like, and we do the same thing in, for example, in California, but you can talk about it. You white label stuff. I mean, you have to make sure you get good stuff, and then you make some pre-rolls with somebody, and then you're selling them. And then how much this comes from a grow, and it's my brand, but it's with flower. What is it? I mean, what am I buying? I'm buying like a pretty box, and then there's some flower from somebody in there. Like, you have to really build then the credibility that's always good in what's out in that box, always great. And then you will probably make the shift of like, okay, I always buy Binsky. Binsky, for example, I think I'm a big fan of Binsky. They white label, but they have all I smoked so far was great. And there's some guys on the top who like this, they're just choosing the right partners, it seems. And this is great. So I'm trusting now Binsky that they actually have good stuff. They might be in different markets. We might not have so good stuff because it's always market by market. But California is great. And theirs has a chance to get to that. They're really trying that. You know, that Binsky is a good example of a brand who like wants to be that like brand. Like it's a lifestyle brand as well. Could be like clothing and apparel and garment stuff, and so it's bigger than just cannabis. So you have to play it like that. But I'm not sure this is like worth doing with flower really. Like, but the other stuff, 100%. You know, like you can, if I can tell you the tale about my lemons coming from south of France, sustainably grown, and it's in the hills of the Champagne Valley, and. Be like, where are the gummies, right?
I mean, send us a baggie.
So with the flower, it's like you can do the same, but you cannot really believe if I have the whatever like brand, like I just had here Malibu Gold, for example. It's great. It looks beautiful. It's in this golden jar. But then I forget about it. Like I have the golden jar. They still have the golden jar. Use it for other stuff. I think I have some pins in it or something, but not even weed, you know. But I kept the packaging, but I'm never going to buy it again. Because it's just, if you get into it, you don't, this is as well, it can get expensive, right? I mean, like you have this little thing and there's like two little buds in it and it's like super expensive. And I smoke a lot now because of my tolerance went up. So I cannot even, that rest lasts me like a day or whatever, like on the weekend. So I have to think about ounces now. And, then all this unsustainable packaging, right? This is a nightmare. The transport, the carbon footprint, or that's why we all go to Mylar. It makes no sense to have anything else than Mylar bags, really. Like, they're made out of sustainable, you know, like recycled materials. You can store it better when you send it to the dispensaries. They don't have so much weight to carry, right, with all that stuff, with storage, and it costs all money. That stuff comes from China. I prefer like the vendors come from America. To be honest, it's faster, and I can look at that stuff, and it's more creative because it can switch out faster. So that's all like things to consider. Like, but to answer your question, I think flour is questionable, and then the rest is like there will be great brands in all categories. And I think
I agree with Trey, and I think that a really good comparison is the wine industry, right? Like, we don't go out and buy grapes in packages, right? But you're going to pay extra for a bottle of wine with that story and everything that's attached. So
yeah, and the whole process, yes. There's something gone into it. This is grown somewhere. Somebody looked at it, put it in the thing. Then they're stamped with their field and they filtered it. And the
process
is going to cost more. And if it's been 15 years old and this was a great harvest, of course you can make this now, like, pay a lot of money for it because somebody did something for the money as well. But just putting flour into it, the nice packaging, it's great now, right? Isn't it? I was like, no. Whereas I love the packaging. Can I have some good flour? That's what we get on, you know, I get this on Reddit sometimes. They're asking that. If I have great packaging. If there was a bunch of flour which was not that they didn't like, they say, great packaging, but can I have some wheat, please?
So, what do you think, Brian?
I think it's going to take creative teams like what Dre's doing with having different variable of different style products in the boxes. I think that's a very creative, innovative way in order to draw attention and eyeballs to the situation. I was thinking about that would definitely draw me in and I would be intrigued by the mystery of it and I'd want to try the product. And I think when you're seeing 1,000 different products on a shelf, all of them look and feel the same and you see one slightly different, it's intriguing. And if your team continues to deliver on that style quality product, I think it'll help separate from its peers and allow it to really push it to the new level. And it wouldn't shock me if other brands try to copy that because that's the establishment of what is expected. Your team is really pushing the barrier for what's next. And it's expected that the other peers meet that level because the consumer now is expecting a different style experience. And I think that could make cannabis an opportunity to compete with the other CPG products.
Yeah.
So Dre, for our listeners, they want to get in touch, they want to watch Juicy TV, and they want to learn more. Where can they find you?
Yeah, so just go to juicyco.com. So juicy, like it's here, but the co.com. That's our main website. From there, you can go to all the brands, to all the retail brands. We have all the stores from there. And as well, Juicy TV has our own menu to click on. We have as well, what I want to say as well, like we're very proud of, as Juicy is one of one of the greatest things we've done is we have a collaboration with a charity called Drop for Drop. And we have built last year, we've built over 11 wells in Africa and India, which gives water to people who have no access to water. So we're basically building those wells and they last for 10 years and so on. And this is what we're very proud of. This is our, we call this Go Beyond. It comes from our Beyond a little bit, this Go Beyond initiative. So we want to do good as well. And water is something very close to our hearts because we're wasting so much water, you know, like us in our lives and as well in these facilities we build. So we've been very, very conscious about like how to make those facilities not waste anything in energy, water and all that. So that's why water is such a, it's an important thing. I think water and cannabis goes good together. So we did that. So we have a very proud of this, what we did there in Africa. And we keep doing more this year. And our new brand as well will be very close with Drop for Drop, the foundation. It only costs like $3,500 to build one well, imagine. And it lasts for years. So you're giving hundreds of people access to water, education. This has a chain reaction of changing a little bit their lives, right? In these places. And I think we're very proud. It gives us good energy. And I think if that's the only thing we've achieved is already something because that's now 11 wells and thousands of people get water. And that results into people getting a better education. They don't have to run around all over to get water, can wash themselves. It's amazing what this stuff does. So whoever wants to chime in and whoever watches this and wants to find out about it, so go to juicyco.com and then Go Beyond, and there's links as well to Drop for Drop. It's a cool thing. Everybody can donate. And that's and my stuff is on Neumann Vision on Instagram. You can follow me, Neumann with one N in this case, Neumann Vision on Instagram. And I post only rock and roll stuff, no cannabis stuff.
All right. We'll link it all up in the show notes. Thanks for taking the time. This was fun.
Yeah. Awesome.
Guys, if you've enjoyed this podcast over the last few years, can you please take 3 minutes or less and leave us a quick review on Apple or Spotify? All reviews make a massive difference for us and help other people like you find this podcast. From the bottom of our hearts, thank you.
Thanks for listening to today's show. To check out more great cannabis podcasts, go to podconnects.com. Here's a preview of one of our other shows.
99.9% of our DNA is identical. It's a 0.1% that truly makes us different and unique. And that's what the show is about. Find out that 0.1% about your favorite guests. Find out what music they like, their first cannabis experience, and even what their room looked like growing up. But more importantly, or as important, their journey. Learn what makes them unique on Everything Is Personal.